Hey, Prime members, you can listen to this show ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Happy Mum, Happy Baby, the podcast. We are remote. I'm recording it from my house. My guest is in her house. We've never met before. It's a bit weird. I just want to leap across and hug her. She's got a bottom behind her and a mannequin. Today's guest is a singer, songwriter, an actress, mother of one. It's Paloma Faith. Hi.
Hello. I'm so happy to be on this podcast because I listen to it a lot and I love what you're doing. The reason why I'm on it is because I wrote to my managers and was like, I want to be on this. And they're like, oh, they said you could do it.
They've already been knocking on the door. I'm glad you like it.
Yeah, it's really refreshing and nice. I mean, I'm, as people who know about me know, that I'm painfully honest. So I think that stuff's really important.
Yeah. What was your childhood like?
I don't know, because I always say, oh, it was really magical in some ways. I think my mum was a primary school teacher and she, in Hackney, and she made things really imaginative and exciting and community and all that. But also my parents divorced when I was two and it wasn't like a simple, it was like there's alcohol and abuse involved. Yeah, so it was like a mix of things. But I actually, when I got a memory of, like, as a kid, some kid from my area asking me what my childhood was like, and I remember saying to them, like, it was amazing. It was so amazing. And then my mum came outside from the kitchen and went, I heard that, it wasn't. I guess it's all about perception.
Well, maybe you've just blocked out all of that stuff, though, and actually what you've taken away from it is the magic.
Blocking.
And did you always know that you wanted to have kids?
I've been talking a lot about this recently because a lot of my new writing for my album's going to be about motherhood. And it's interesting because I always wanted to have children. I'm a Cancerian, whether you believe in that or not, but it's, we're maternal apparently, and I've always been like somebody who's very much a caregiver. Like, I had friends who've slept on my living room floor for like 2 years. I have people who've come in and out of my life, had nowhere to go, and I've sort of looked after them, and I thrive on that. My taste in men reflects that as well. I've never really been out with someone who's financially or ambition wise my equal. Like, most of them need a good kit.
And I think it's people that need looking after them.
Yeah, I do. I naturally like that. And I felt very geared up for parenthood. And in my mind, I was going to have lots of children. And I had a really good role model because my mum was pretty amazing. Yeah, and then I had my baby and lots of things went wrong. And I was sadder than I've ever been before. And I felt broken, largely by the disappointment that I wasn't the mother that I thought I'd be.
So what sort of mum did you think you were going to be?
Well, I thought I was going to take to it like a duck to water, and it was going to be very instant. Because you help people who aren't your child, and it's different. It's not unconditional, and it's not, you know, like, they can still hurt you in a way that adults can do. And with a baby that's vulnerable and stuff, you sort of imagine that it would be like this intertwining. And it's sort of strange because lots of things went wrong for me during my pregnancy and during the birth. And then post-birth, I had a infection in my womb and I was like very ill for 3 months. I couldn't stand up. So I was basically like a milk machine for 3 months.
Yeah.
Which was like the opposite of what of the world that I've created for myself. Because I think the honest truth is that, like, wanting to be a success and sort of play in front of 20,000 people a night is sort of a mental illness, but it's about the validation of strangers, and I missed it so much, and I felt completely unvalidated by motherhood in a way that I thought I'd feel validated.
Yeah, that makes total sense. So how do you even, at the start, going from that 20,000, like, member of the audience, how do you go from that and kind of going, do you know what, I'm going to have a child. How do you schedule that in? Like, how do you kind of go, I'm going to have this massive, like, was it a huge thing for you to kind of go, actually, I'm going to break here and try for a child?
In the past, I had been very fertile and I'd had moments when I was too young to have a baby where I'd chosen not to have it.
Yeah.
And I felt very fertile. And when I met my partner, I felt different with him than I had with most people. Mm. I sort of had this feeling. But he's seven and a half years younger than me. So when I met him, I was 31. He was 24.
Right.
And I was very frank about it. I was like, look, I don't really want to just see how this goes. Like, I'm not really interested in that. So after, like, a couple of months, I just sort of came out with it. I was like, I'm not saying now, but I'm saying if this is going to happen, then that's what I want. Like, I'm not getting younger. And he was like, just like, okay, well, you know, let's see how it goes. I was like, no, cannot. This is what I want. Anyway, so we first started to sort of like not use contraception. And then it was very clear to me very quickly because of how fertile I'd been in the past that we had some problems.
Right.
And then we actually had our baby through IVF.
Ah, was that an emotional experience, having been fertile before and then finally...
It wasn't my problem, it was my partner's.
Oh, okay.
That was sad because I was like, I've got it all, like, I met the one, I've got the money because I've got a career, it's a good time. I feel like I could, like, people laugh when I say this, but it felt like I could go on maternity leave and like still afford to look after myself and my family and maybe come back to work.
Yeah.
Because it is still work. Like, I know that it's glamorous and lovely from the outside, but it's my job and I need to sustain it. So there was a lot of worry about that. And then...
Well, what was it like finding out you were pregnant?
Well, I had a few tries. I had an ectopic one and I had laparoscopy. And then the next one was right, but because it's IVF, it feels so unstable. So throughout my pregnancy, I felt like it was going to go wrong. It was different to, I think, if it was natural, because I'd already lost an ectopic. And then, you know, if I want another baby, I have to sort of schedule in an appointment. And at the moment, that's not looking great due to COVID. And then, and it's sort of, I mean, I don't really talk about the fact it was, I've never, this is an exclusive.
It's interesting, anxiety.
So last year I was trying again, and it's strange because I really love, I think once my daughter turned 18 months, I suddenly was like, I want another one. This is amazing. It's the best.
Yeah.
Then I had the miscarriage and it's sort of an ongoing thing, but it feels, it adds another layer to things when it's not natural because it adds a lot of pressure on your relationship and it adds, like, it's tense.
Yeah. I had a miscarriage.
It's not very sexy.
It's not sexy at all. I think as soon as you know you're trying, it's not sexy.
No. And it's like you put your legs in stirrups and they're like, oh. And now as well, like, so since, because I had a really bad birth, now I have some problems. So we've got double whammy now because I have like a scar that isn't healing properly from my cesarean. So it's like creating a bit of a toxic atmosphere, which is also quite hot.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, you're sounding so sexy right now, Paloma. So would you say that you felt, I know we're jumping around a bit, but would you say that you felt anxious the whole way through that pregnancy?
There was a moment like after I think everyone gets that when you get past 3 months and then you're like, oh, yes,
yeah,
I can breathe. I don't feel crazy anymore. I'm kind of, it's the balancer. And then you get to 6 months and you feel good. And then you get into the last bit And then that's when things started to go quite wrong for me. And I think a lot of it was to do with the fact that I work too much. Mm. And I always have, because I am a workaholic. And I basically, at 7 months pregnant, I did a photo shoot for my album, The Architect. And I was like laying on the platform having 8 gallons of honey poured over my naked pregnant body. I was like, oh my God, I want to look like an AI, like a pregnant AI. And all shiny and everything. And it was such a great idea, but it was really hard on my core and I was exhausted because I was pregnant. And I basically, my waters broke the next day. So I had a premature baby.
Gosh, I didn't realise that.
An album cover.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So did you go into hospital the next day? Was your baby born then? Or how?
I was really scared. So I had premature rupture of waters.
Right.
And I was really scared of the baby not surviving. So I basically put myself on bed rest. I was told to go into hospital and have it induced and get the baby out. But I refused to go. I'm not condoning this behaviour. But I just had a gut feeling that that wasn't right.
Right.
And I was told that if I wasn't going to do that, then I could go in every 48 hours to check. So I had to go to hospital every 48 hours. And in the end, I managed to hold her in for another 3 weeks. So I had my baby 5 weeks premature in the end, and it was going to be 8. So I was glad because, hilariously, the birth was horrendous. I was trying to do it naturally. I was sort of holding on to some ounce of the fact that I'd had all, everything was chemical by that point. And I was like, I need to do this in one way nature intended. And I did like 9 hours with no pain relief. And then they came in and they were like, this isn't happening. You're not dilating. You're really unwell, blah, blah. Everything went a bit crazy. In the end, it was 21 hours of total labor. And then this emergency cesarean. And we were both in hospital for a week. But when they took her out, they were like, had an incubator ready because they were like, she's premature. With her. And she was 7 pounds.
That's a nice-sized baby.
They were like, oh, we don't need all that stuff. This child was cooked.
did they keep you in for a week then just to make sure that everything was fine with you both?
They didn't really tell me much because I think they thought I was under a lot of shock, and I did have a lot of psychological problems after, and I think they felt that I was a bit vulnerable. So it's only since then that I've learned that they kept us in because of me, not because of the baby.
Right.
And apparently I lost a lot of blood and they're a bit worried because I went into a strange, like, quite short term, but a bit of a psychosis, like due to lack of sleep. I'd been in labour already for, like, having contractions for 7 days, and I'd slept 3 hours in 7 days. I was hallucinating. I thought that they'd sewn my head onto the wrong body. And then they took the baby away and they were just like, we think you need to sleep and then we're going to reassess this because you don't seem very well. So they took the baby away for like 8.5 hours and I just slept.
Right.
And then I woke up and I was like, I'm so sorry. Like, I was crazy. I could remember everything I'd said and believed to be real. But then I realised then after 8.5 hours sleep that it was delirium.
Do you remember the first time meeting your baby and what that was like? Or did you have like two versions of it? One actually when they were born and then...
Well, I was awake when she was born. So like, I was looking at her and I remember it. But I remember like I was so weak, I couldn't hold her. So they put her in my arms and I was going, I'm going to drop her. And I just got my partner to take her. So like, it was a while before... I'd have her on me and stuff, but I couldn't lift her up for a good few days.
What did that feel like? Because obviously there's so much put on that bond, there's so much said about, when you meet your baby, you're going to feel that instant rush of love and there's going to be a bond like no other. And for so many people, that doesn't happen. So when that doesn't happen...
Well, I thought she wasn't mine for a while. I was like, that's not my baby. That's totally not what I thought my baby would be like. And I was looking at her and I said... And I'm lucky because my partner's quite like... me, like, he's open.
Yeah.
I was like, do you think that's ours? And he was like, I don't know. I started emailing doctors saying, is there any way, like, you might have put the wrong embryo in me? But now you can see it, like, our child exactly looks like us. But it's just at the time, it was like, I'm supposed to feel this thing and I don't feel it. Because, I mean, I wish we were like giraffes.
What do they do?
They like give birth and the baby just stands up and then goes and eats leaves.
Independent straight
away.
The mum's
got
There's
time
the pile.
To recover. We're just like these kind of like helpless amoebas.
It must be really hard when nothing, no part of it went how you imagined it would go.
Yeah, but it's so amazing that I got all that later. So skip forward to... now, and my it's really bad to say, but my child's like a bit obsessed by me and I really like it. It's like I'm totally validated. She sort of looks at me like a big sister, like sort of in that awestruck way, like, what do you think? And then if I say anything, it's like perfect.
Yeah.
And if the dad says anything, it's like, no.
See, I'm the one that they're like no to at the moment.
Just
so I
totally
feel that.
Mum obsessed.
Oh gosh.
Yeah.
So how long was it before you felt that you could, because you had your own recovery, how long was it before you felt that you could be that mum? And also you've described it as the saddest time of your life. But yeah. I read that and I was like, those are powerful words.
Yeah, but I wouldn't change it either. And I think it's sort of quite philosophical, being sort of the songwriter I am. I look at it in the sense that, when we think about bigger ideas like the human condition or even the way that religion throughout the years has explained humanity with heaven and hell and all of those things, they're equally as important. And I think sometimes because of the way that society raises us, we sort of dismiss negativity as being the thing we don't want and we only want positivity. And actually, you don't get closer to death than birth. And that's what I felt. I felt like it was dark and it was harrowing and it was like my heart broke open. I was like so... I was heartbroken and... in love more than I'd ever been, and it was a confusing feeling because I've never felt that before, like that sort of love. It's like you're reborn almost.
Is that you do go, it's something that you can't put into words, I don't think, what that whole experience is like. It's so raw and you feel like we all just go around and it's just a weird thing that actually in that moment there's something so animalistic about it. However that is, that life coming into the world.
And it goes against all of social constructs as well. And I think that's really bad. Like I remember saying to my mum, why didn't you tell me before? Like you did it, why didn't you tell me? And she said, because you wouldn't have done it. And I was like, no, I would, but I wish somebody had told me. That's why I like this podcast. I wished that somebody had said heaven and hell do exist on earth, and it was both, and it still is both, like in every situation. Even like the lockdown, me and my partner, some nights when our daughter's gone to bed, we're like, wonder what this would be if we didn't have Like, maybe we'd get up at 12, watch a film.
Oh, don't. With everyone at the moment
have
talking
sex
about...
at 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Have sex. Just that.
Yeah, just
that.
Have sex, exactly. Or, like, and not just go to bed and go, should we? Oh, can we just not? I'm tired.
Let's just like, quick peck on the lips, go, okay, roll over. Bye-bye.
Who are you?
It's that funny thing at the moment. Right now, I think there is that massive divide of people that are... that have children at home and have all those responsibilities and that are still trying to juggle their normal workload, and people that have still got their workload but don't have children at home, or those other, you know, aren't caring for people. So I, you know, when I hear of people taking up languages, learning an instrument, I'm like, what?
How? Oh. I know, I want to read a book. I haven't read a book since she was born, from cover to cover.
Sad, isn't
it? I do start, and then by the time I pick it up again, I forgot what's happened already. So I just go and forget it. Just watch box set. I used to be highbrow.
Spin your passion into a business with Shopify and break sales records with the world's best converting checkout. Let's hear that one more time. The world's best converting checkout. Shopify's legendary checkout makes it easier for customers to shop on your website, across social media, and everywhere in between. Now that's music to your ears. Any way you spin it, you can be a smash hit with Shopify. Start your dollar a month trial today at shopify.com/records.
Listen to this Acast show ad-free on Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to this show ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today.
Back to your labour and birth, do you feel like it has stayed with you? Because obviously you've spoken about it a lot, and I think it's amazing, because I've heard you say a lot about you wish people had told you the truth, like you said about your mum. And I think it is important for people to know that birth is lots of things. But do you feel like you've been able to, because you hear of so many people who haven't been able to accept the birth that they've had, and it kind of sticks with them like a post-traumatic stress, and it, they kind of can't move forward. They almost can't forgive that that's happened, in a way.
I feel like if my child had frozen as a six-month-old baby, I might be one of those people. But because my child's growing and every day is more rewarding, it feels so worth it. And it does make me want to have another one. And it makes me feel prepared to put myself at that risk again, because I am now categorised as high risk. And like, because the scar and everything, they're saying, like, you know, there's a chance that you can rupture if you have like an ill-healed scar.
Right.
And I'm just like, do you know what? I'll just do it again. It's so weird that somebody would do that, not knowingly, but it's worth it now. And I wouldn't have said that probably for a year. I think it was a year before I felt like that my baby and I could be two people.
Yeah.
And I felt like I gave myself away for a year, and I didn't enjoy giving myself away.
Which is funny when you think about the sort of mum that you thought you were going to be, and how nurturing you are as a person.
Well, I felt that I couldn't do those things because physical stuff, like I felt depleted, I felt depressed mentally, and I feel like that's why I'm really loving it now, because I'm better.
Yeah.
And I love, like, you know, the balance I have as well between working and I'm the breadwinner, and I get to like go away from my child, which I think is really important for parents to do, and come back and be full of ideas and energy. And I know she loves it, because she's like, I'm like, today we're gonna, like, I just come up with things. Like yesterday we did the feelings train, and we built a little train, and we stopped off at different stops, and then talking about which stopped express, and then she was asking the cuddly toys how they were feeling. I was pretending to be them. Then I was like, how do you feel? What makes you feel these things? You know, like, I love all that stuff. Yeah. Like, I'm in my element.
Do you feel like actually going away and coming back allows you to be creative with her, whereas if you were in it the whole time?
Yeah, I do, and I think it's really important. And I think, you know, the thing I miss most in this lockdown is the nursery.
Yeah.
Because I just think that space, so that I can, like, actually, like, go and buy a book about things or put an activity together or receive a cardboard box and not just see it as a cardboard box. Mm. I, like, love that, and I'm good at that, but you can't just do that on tap. It's impossible. Like, I think, you know, a lot of parents in the lockdown are feeling that pressure to, like, constantly be informative and educational and have all these ideas, and I just don't think when it's day in, day out, especially with more than one, that, like, you can expect yourself or be expected to do that. And it's the space I have that makes me the one who is like that.
Yeah.
Because I go away and then I get invigorated, and I also get the validation of strangers, which is my drug, I confess. And then I come back feeling like full of stuff that I'm able to pour back in. And I think that's what I missed with a baby.
Mm.
And I also had this thing as well that I don't really have that many friends who are successful or wealthy. So I didn't know. I mean, it was never a question to me that I would have help.
Like, right.
I didn't want to do that. And I tried when it first started, because obviously my managers wanted me to get back to work.
How long did you leave it?
5.5 months before I went back.
Yeah.
But I did it in increments.
Right.
So I'd do like 3 days a week first, and then increase. I was advised that I would have a nanny because my partner was working at the time as well. And and I tried it for a very short period of time, and it was really bad for me. It made me want to stop work completely.
Was it someone else being with your baby?
It was a combination of someone else being with my baby, and also I think culturally it doesn't sit right with me. My partner's Algerian, and that's like a very family thing. And my mother's from like a big family, British, but like very working class. And also... like my dad's Spanish, and I think that's all about family as well. So it didn't feel right. It felt bad for my child almost. And I think I love nursery because it's a social element, but this is like one-on-one if you have a nanny. So I tried it a bit and nearly had a nervous breakdown. I was scared of the nanny. She was always telling me off for being late and stuff, because I have a very open job. Like, you can't sort of say I'm leaving at 5 with my job. If you've got 200 people in the room looking at you with cameras on you and whatever, you can't go, it's 5, sorry, I've got to go because the nanny. And my nanny used to like have a go at me because she had a yoga class or something.
How long did you have her for?
I think about 5 months.
Right.
I tried it for. And we went on tour, and that was awful because I had like mum guilt. So I would wake up at 7 in the morning to be with my child all day, then put her to bed at 7, and then the nanny would sit in the tour bus and like make sure she was okay, she woke up, whatever. Meanwhile, I'd be in hair and makeup, well, doing my own, and then walk onto stage. And it was arena tour, it'd be like anything between 12 and 20,000 people while my baby was asleep on a tour bus. And then I'd come home to the bus, which we slept on, about midnight. And then I would go to sleep and then wake up at 7 again.
Were you able, once you came off stage, to just kind of slip back into mum mode? I know that your baby would have been asleep probably by then, but were you able to just
I'd put her to sleep and she'd never even knew that I was leaving. I had like a nightlife that she never had any clue, because she wouldn't wake up. So
yeah.
it would be literally like a double lie. And then when she woke me up in the morning, there'd be no trace, no, like, it was so weird. And then on days off, I'd do it as well. And I think even though I had the nanny there, I just didn't feel, I felt too guilty not to spend any minute with my child when she was awake or on a day off. So I didn't actually have a day off.
Yeah. But you'd have that adrenaline from coming off stage. You'd have that adrenaline pumping through you from having that, you know, that experience. Then having to go to the tour bus and sleep pretty much, like knowing that you'd be up at up seven.
Or 6:30 some mornings, as we know, unpredictably. But also then it just didn't sit right with me. I couldn't handle it. And I started to lose the plot a bit and I was feeling pressure because my partner really wasn't, he wasn't working for money, he was interning, so it was pretty clear that I was either going to have a nervous breakdown or he had to stop. So he stopped and he said, I'm going to look after our child. And from that day on, it was so much better because I didn't feel guilty anymore because I didn't have my dad there as much as I would have liked as a kid. So I was giving my child, I felt in psychologically, I was giving my child a gift, like something I didn't have, even though I'm still the favourite.
Have you been on tour, like, again since, but now without your child?
No, I do sometimes do. So I have like a rule within my own mind that's like, if I have to go to work for 5 days or less, then I go by myself now.
Yeah.
And if it's more than 5 days, then I bring my partner and my child as well. It's more for me, I think.
And what I love as well is that you've said you love your job. And actually you have experienced almost guilt for that because you love your child, but you also love your job. So you actually want to go.
Yeah, and actually, so when we were doing the feelings train, which I spoke about yesterday, we arrived at the stop of sad. And the teddy was sad because no one would play with it. But then I said, what makes you sad? And she said, when mummy goes to work. And then I said, but mummy is happy when I go to work. So it makes me happy. And then she said, you can go to work. But I think what's lucky about what I do is like I am sort of the boss of it. So I can bring her with me, and I think a lot of people don't have that luxury. But my child really doesn't like sharing me, right. So it gets a bit emotional. But the oldest, she's 3.5 now, so
like, so I guess you're going to have the massive shift as well. Will she be going to school in this September or next September?
The following one, so then it will be probably less able to come, on things.
Which I wonder if that's another, like, that alleviates pressure again, that guilt again, because they have somewhere that they have to be.
Yeah, they've got well, I feel like that's why I love the nursery so much, because, like, it's amazing when your child starts coming home and saying they love somebody else or they, like, have a friendship that's exclusive to them. And, like, in this lockdown, you can really see it. Like, I sometimes do, like, you know, FaceTimes with nursery friends or whatever. And they just have this world that they communicate in that's not how they communicate with their parent. And it's so nice. Makes me feel good that, like, she's learning social skills and, like, although most of it revolves around saying poo, to be honest, at this point.
All of my kids.
Which is always just funny.
But it gets to the point, doesn't it, where it's just like you can't stop it, so you've just got to embrace it. Well, my husband writes books about, like, dinosaurs that poo, so, you know, I've got to roll with it.
We love that. Yeah.
How do you feel having a child has affected your relationship?
It's affected a lot of, like, the romance and the love of each other negatively. But as I keep saying to people, it's so strange, but he's the person I least hate. Like, when I think in the concept of, like, the lockdown,
yeah,
I'm so glad that I'm locked down with him and not with even my best friend or my mum, or like, not because I don't love them, but because we've just got this way of, we figured it out, like how not to step on each other's toes, and we sort of accept each other for what we are. And I think that's really special.
I think there's this massive thing as well about comfort being a really negative thing. And actually, when you find that person that you're comfortable with, and, you know, I feel like there's always going to be that resentment in parenthood. Like, you're always going to, they're the person that you can kind of take that out on, rightly or wrongly.
Yeah.
And so you know that there's no pretense.
Yes. And I also think, like, so both me and my partner grew up in difficult, aggressive, that, like, environments. And I think that what we're showing our child in the way we deal with conflict and resolution is really important. Yeah. Like, that actually I think it's really important to have conflict in front of your child, actually, but, like, to do it in a measured and proper way. Like, so talk about, like, say, that hurt my feelings, or it's annoying when you do that. And then to show the resolution, like, sorry, and then have a cuddle or whatever. Like, it's not as exciting as it was. Like, I think me and my partner had quite a good run. Like, the longest I've had with anyone, really, we had, like, 5 years where it was just brilliant, and it was really romantic and just felt like the one, almost, for want of a better word. But now it's like, no, you're not the one. I hate your guts. But we're stuck with each other.
Well, I think it's that thing of knowing that sometimes it's okay to have those feelings and that they go again. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't actually mean anything. It just, in that moment, you're kind of like, hey, rah, 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 and then it goes.
Yeah, totally. And also, we have a lot of, you know, like, I think our core kind of views on raising the child are the same, but there are, like, the odd niggly things, like, well, I wouldn't do it like that, or, you know, whatever. And I'm really bad at not saying things straight away, and I think it's bad to say in front of our child that stuff, because it's like, she's listening and going, ooh, I quite like that, I could wriggle in there and take advantage of the disagreement. Yeah, mum's right, that's what it always is.
I think it's funny though how arguments happen very differently anyway now. Like, I don't know about you two, but back when me and Tom first got together, I mean, we were 18, but it was fiery. Like, we'd have arguments, one of us would leave the house. Whereas now, I wouldn't dream of doing anything like that. It's just not dramatic.
We never
anymore.
Really did that because we're both terrified of recreating our parents' lives. That's true. But I do, it is different. It's like, sometimes, do you have text arguments?
Oh, no.
We do. We'll both be, like, sat on the sofa and then, like, WhatsApp. Da-da-da, I didn't like the word of it. And then she's sitting there watching Iggle Piggle or something. It's just like, oh, you arsehole,
What parts of your childhood do you want your daughter to have?
I think the imagination side of it, like, I think that the reason why I'm creative is because I was raised to, like, it's like a famous, is it Magritte painting, like, this is not a pipe, and the picture of the pipe.
Right.
I think that sort of sums up my childhood. Like, my mum was, like, single parent. She was a key worker, worked a lot. She was really hardworking. And I think I got my work ethic from both parents, actually, because they're both really hardworking. But, like, say, for example, she would say, we're going to go to a restaurant. We never went to restaurants because it was too much of an expense, but we'd, like, make one, and she would, like, build a little table outside the house, do a tablecloth, and, like, write a menu and decorate it. And it would just literally be, like, tomato sauce pasta, but she'd, like, describe it as tomato glazed roll, and I'd just be like, oh, have the tomato pasta, please. But I was like 5, and I just thought she was amazing. I thought it was magical, and I feel like that's the sort of thing that I try and do, like, especially in lockdown, all that stuff really coming in handy. Like, today we're going to the beach, and then, like, we build a beach and we all like put shorts on. Or like today we made like a whole village out of a cardboard box with all our toy cars going round. And yeah, and I also think as well, emotionally, my mum was very open, and I think that's really important. Like, I talk to my three-year-old a lot about the virus and how it makes us feel, and nothing's dismissed. I'm not pretending that it's all good, but it's not all doom and gloom either. It's just like about that kind of dialogue, and I think I grew up with that, and so that's why I've been branded as, quote, refreshingly honest. But I don't know anything else. It's just because that's how I was raised. It's like, yeah, that, you know, you've got to accept your true feelings, and that we're all human beings, and sometimes we have bad thoughts and then we don't want them to even enter our minds. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, sometimes in lockdown I just say, all right, when I go out I'm gonna have a big affair. Of course I'm not. I wish that didn't even come into my head. But some days you're just sitting there just so bored. You're just like, right, that's it.
I'm going to really spice things up when I leave quarantine.
Yeah, but like the honest thing is you get out and you're like, but you're not him.
I think the first thing we'll do when we leave the house is probably get 10 steps and go, actually, I'm just going to go back. It's safer. I'm tired. One thing which is surprising that I'm bringing up, because you have said daughter the whole way through this episode and this chat, but it came up a lot that there was this big thing made about you raising your child gender neutrally. And so I've done more research and I've seen that you've actually talked about how that was completely taken out of context in the first place.
Obviously, I told you it took me about a year to recover, I think, mentally, and about 6 months to recover physically.
Yeah.
And probably all in all, I'd say 2 years fully, both ways. And actually, there were things physically that I weren't going to detail that still are fucked.
No. But that's the thing, though, isn't it? But so all that stuff happens, though, and you're meant to just be like, yeah, it's fine. Like, it's all fine.
Yeah,
like,
and don't talk about it. And it's just annoying. But, like, so the reason why at first I didn't say the gender was because I didn't want any information about my child, because I think that at times there's a toxicity about being a celebrity. And I think that that's a choice I made.
Yeah.
Like, the good outweighs the bad for me. But I don't want to make that choice for a child. So originally I didn't say any details. So I didn't want even my child's gender to be out there. But it was partially because I was in this mother instinct, like protective, and the animal that we talked about earlier was there. And it stayed for a long time. It stayed till she was about two. And then now it's like, well, no one's going to sort of like narrow it down to boy or girl. It's not really that bad. So I'll just say it. And I think the media interpreted it because of like my background as being arty and like very LGBTQIXYZ about life. I feel like they just interpreted it that way. Also, I did say in one interview, and they put those two things together, that I wasn't going to raise my child with gender-specific toys, which is not revolutionary on any level. Like, I was not raised with them either, and I'm, you know, a generation before. So it's not exactly like, oh, my God, how innovative or how terrible. And I had people calling me a child abuser online for saying that.
Isn't that crazy how that's something that you've said that isn't a massive deal at all, that has been twisted so much.
Yeah, and I think that's sort of part and parcel of why I didn't want the information. And I still sort of withhold that. So if I'm with my child in public and somebody comes over and asks to have their picture taken with me, I never do it. At this moment, my child has no idea that I'm famous or that I'm different to anyone else. She does know that I go on TV because she's seen it, but she has no concept that makes people treat me differently.
Yeah.
Like, and sometimes somebody might come over and say something to me and she'll say, why are they doing that? And I just say, because they like mummy singing. but I don't really like make it into a thing. Like, yeah. Well, there's people like me who are really special, because it's absolute nonsense.
See,
it is just my
kids
job.
Just think that everyone is on TV. They're just like, can we watch this person? That, like, well, it doesn't
really
work.
And I think as well, like, when I talk to my child about jobs, like, what jobs do you want to do? I'm really trying to force it home, like, help people. Yeah. Like, I'd be so proud if my child ended up being a nurse or an ambulance person or a care worker or somebody who makes waves in the charity sector. Like, I mean, that's really what I would love. Obviously, you can't train your child to do those things, but I'm trying to instill, like, empathy as a, you know, the most important factor. And I kind of hope that the reason why I am successful is because of empathy, not because of anything else. Like, I hope that it's because I've articulated a universal feeling of, like, the human condition, which is hopefully helpful in some way. Because if it wasn't, I'd probably just retire and do something else. But that was the root of it. I don't want her to know until she needs to know. And I also don't want her, or anyone for that matter, to see me differently, because I'm very honest about the stuff. Like, for example, in this quarantine, I am honest about the fact that I have a back garden. I think that I am so fortunate. Yeah. I think that I attribute, it's such small things that help you mentally, and I'm so grateful for that. And I think it's awful that people are in situations, for example, when they shut down Broccoli Park in South London, and the media was like, people going out sunbathing, and it was appalling behaviour. And it's like, well, actually, that whole place is surrounded by blocks of flats that have no outdoor space and like very little, if balconies at all. So, and it was hot, like, we had no choice. Like, do you know what I mean? I do want my child to have a good start in life, like, as an individual that makes her own way. That's why my child goes to state school nursery and will go to state school. And that's why I had my child on the NHS and will always support the NHS. And I do have my child in the NHS, and then I do donation or whatever, because I want to keep it going, and I don't want to, like, take from too much, you know?
Yeah. Another thing you've spoken about is that longing for another child, and the fact that you've had miscarriages since.
Yeah.
And I think it's so important.
And
that
I also
that
don't know if now, because of COVID, I don't know if now I'll ever have another one, because of my age and because we don't know how long this is going to go on for, or if that will be last on the list of priorities, or even if it's really a good idea to try and conceive another baby if there's going to be a second wave. I mean, it's really sad and harrowing to hear what some pregnant women are enduring. Yeah. And you read these stories, and also, like, we know people who've had COVID and had to have their babies prematurely and been very sick. So
is it something that you've had to think about, you know? Is it the idea of not even going again and trying again, is that something that you've thought about during lockdown?
It is. And actually, I think the lockdown and the situation has made it easier, because when I started to have the miscarriages and stuff, I started to come to that view, like, oh my God, I might not have another one. And I was really upset. And now I feel like this is making me grateful for what I do have.
Yeah.
My perspective on this whole lockdown has been like, I'm so lucky that I have a child, because some people won't have one because of this ever. Yeah. I'm so lucky that I have a partner that I can tolerate. I am lucky that I've got money for food, and that I... You know, all those things that everyone's watching this thinking about me, well, you know, she's rich, she's bloody, whatever. It's like, I'm aware, everyone. I made some good decisions and I had some luck and I worked really hard to get to a point where I have a certain level of security that I'm happy about. And I think if I don't get to have another child because of this, I'm just going to focus on those things.
Yeah. It is amazing that you shared the fact that you had those miscarriages in the first place before coming to this point now. Because I think so many people go through it, and it is still something that whenever miscarriage is talked about on the podcast, there's always someone that's been through it that doesn't feel heard, that feels like they're the only one that's experienced it, that they've failed. So I think it's really important that even that is discussed, and you've spoken about it publicly.
Well, I think what I'm talking about is something called secondary infertility, mm-hmm. which is what I've been labelled with, which is somebody who didn't have any problems with fertility and then the birth of their first child causes problems for their future fertility.
Yeah.
So like that's why I had a miscarriage apparently.
How far along, do you mind if I ask how far along you were with those?
Well, obviously when you're doing IVF you know everything very quickly, so it was quite early on. So I think 6 weeks or something. Like some people wouldn't even know they're pregnant then. But I definitely do. Oh my God, my boobs, they're ridiculous. I know after a week.
But your mind goes somewhere, doesn't it? When you know that you're pregnant, your mind goes somewhere. And I don't think it matters how long you sit in that pregnancy for. You're all your hopes and dreams, you envisaged your children playing together and what life would look like.
I was so, so happy about it. I was also on set filming the TV show that I'm in called Pennyworth, which I act in. And I hadn't, like, said I was pregnant because it was only about 6 weeks. And I was miscarrying on set. I had a miscarriage on set and I just kept acting. And I went to the toilet about 9 times. I just, like, kept doing it. And then I actually spoke about it since, because I was a bit like, I didn't want them to think that I was like either a drug addict or like, you know, just like, you know, I was having a miscarriage. I didn't really want to tell you at the time because I didn't want anyone to like stop, because it was helping me. It was actually helping me to keep working, even though it was kind of painful. It was helping me to just be doing something else that was my thing.
Well, because there's such an emptiness that comes with miscarriages. For me, I found like it was like a void. So to be able to fill it with something like working, I literally had a friend come over and we stuck stickers on boxes for her wedding. But just having that thing to do.
Yeah, you've got to do something. Mm. Yeah, and that's what I felt. And so, yeah, I just kept doing it. And I know the scene. So it's I know the scene. I watch it because it's in the first series and I could see it. Like, I was like, God, that was them.
Yeah. Do you feel like you can see it in you, that, or is it just something you can relate to that?
Not really, but I just know that was when you couldn't tell in my performance. My character's very kind of bound up anyway. She's quite a mess psychologically, so it's probably helpful.
How do you think your confidence has changed in motherhood?
I feel more confident in strange ways.
Yeah.
So before I was very kind of, I would never like show my body. And now I'm just like, yeah, I can't wait to be naked. And it's rubbish compared to what it was when I should have been showing it.
I think back to myself 18 and I'm like, why?
It's like in the bath the other night, my daughter was like, we were in the bath, she was like lifting my boob going, why are they down? And I was like, because you ruined them. What did I do? I said, you took all the milk out and now they're empty. Like my soul. No joking.
Did breastfeeding go well for you?
It was like my attitude towards work was my attitude towards breastfeeding, which was like, I will not be defeated and I'm going to be determined about doing this, and I really regret that attitude.
Really?
I think if I had another baby, I would probably breastfeed for maybe the first month and then get on the bottle straight away. I did 7.5 months breastfeeding, including expressing and freezing and losing those awful moments where you like do something wrong and you have to throw all that breast milk down the sink because you've expressed it all, and then the fridge went off and it was like a bit thawed and then it wasn't healthy, and it's like I was crying that day, like pouring breast milk down the drain. But like I did it, and there were moments towards the end of doing it where I thought it was beautiful and special, but the majority of the time it was painful. It hurt me, and I actually was hoping that by doing it, I'd lose all the baby weight, and it wasn't until I stopped that I lost it. Unlike my best friend, who became emaciated.
There's all these different things,
who
isn't
I'm really angry about. I was like, it's going to come off soon, just keep going.
Keep sucking.
Yeah, it didn't do that for me. It stopped when I went to the bottle. And then it was like, all this stuff happens. It's like, the clouds clear, like the sun comes out when you put your baby on a bottle, and like they suddenly sleep longer, and like they seem more content, and they don't have the same colic. I don't know what was in my breast milk, but it was making my child like really, it was like hard to digest or something.
Yeah.
Whereas the formula wasn't. It was like just a happy baby. And I was happier, as you say in your podcast. Yeah. So, yeah, if I was to have another one, I probably wouldn't. I'd probably try it for a bit, and then I'd stop at the first sign of any problems, because I had mastitis as well as the womb infection, and that was really
physically
bad.
You've taken a right battering.
Yeah, it was awful. I had it very badly, so I was like shivering and convulsing in bed, and I had to go on a drip in my bed because the doctors thought shouldn't go to the hospital. I was so sick, didn't stand. That was just from mastitis.
Yeah.
I'm like a real advertisement. Any new pregnant women watching? Welcome to hell.
But I think when you're talking about all that physical stuff though, it's no wonder all that physical, and that would be pain that you're experiencing from wherever in your body. It's no wonder you have
been stubborn. I was feeding through it with mastitis. I didn't even touch a bottle. I was like, it was bleeding and I was feeding and I was just like, I will not. And I was just like, so I look back and I just think, if I could talk to myself, what were you doing? It's okay to put your baby on a bottle. It really doesn't, it won't affect the relationship. The relationship is built on, like you say, both baby and mum being happy. Mm-hmm. And also it's built on the fact that you are like a constant in that baby's life and you pour love into it in whatever way it manifests. And that sort of happens. And then one day when they can first speak and their first word's mama, even though you put them on a bottle, really you're like, oh, you do love me. And now that's all I ever hear. Like, I can hear it through the ceiling. Like, this is my basement where I, like, record music and do a bit of gym. And I've got my mannequin and a few coats. But this is what I call my man cave.
Nice.
Because that's what in society it's meant to be, except I'm that person. And I can just, all day long, every time I take the headphones off, whatever, I can just hear, Mama!
Glad I'm not the only one. Do you experience mum guilt?
All the time. And I feel like I'm damned if I do and damned if I don't. Like, yeah. I feel so passionate about my work as a musician and an actress. I feel like almost like a responsibility to keep doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know that there are people waiting for it and that who like it, and it's become, you know, I think it's been about 11, 12 years in the public eye, and I think people have, you know, I've got fans that remember me from when they were 10,
yeah,
and now they're 21 and they're sort of like, I've grown up with you, where are you? I need the next album or whatever. So I feel that, and then I also feel like every time I leave that I'm taking something away from her. But I've started to try and think differently about that. And I've started also, and I think this is really important that working mums do this, I've started to come home and talk about why I loved my work today. And I think it's important for her to hear what I did and why it makes me happy. And then I've started to hear how that's coming through, because now she says, when I'm bigger, I might be this, and then I'll come and tell you what I did. Aww. You know, like, it's really like going in. I think that's important, that I also have so much respect for the women who stay at home. I just don't know how they do it, because it's harder.
Yeah, I do think so. Yeah, I do. Because you're not getting that break. You're not having any chance to be you, whether that's Paloma Faith the singer or whatever it is. You're not
getting any chance. Or just someone asking your opinion and valuing it.
Mm-hmm.
Like saying, oh, I've put these two images together. Like, which one do you think is the best one? Like, oh, well, I think, oh, yeah, actually, you're right. That's so amazing for your, like, for your sense of self and your sense of inner personal joy. And I think everyone's different, like you said, happy mum, happy baby. And I was depressed because I wasn't at work and I missed work so much. It was like, I realised it was what I do is one of the greatest loves of my life. And I was heartbroken not to be with the love of my life. Yeah. Which is that. And the first day that I remember, like, when we went on that tour that I told you about, and I walked on stage in front of 20,000 people, and my baby was asleep on the tour bus, and I was just winding myself up on the side of the stage thinking, she's waking up. And I text the girl who was looking after her if she woke up, is she awake? And she said, no. And I was literally just breathed and walked onto stage in front of that many people, and I just burst out crying. I didn't even do the first song, and they were like looking at me like, it was a bit of a weird start. And I was like, I just come off maternity leave, I'm an emotional wreck. Everyone started clapping, and I was like, I'm really sorry, but things just got really real in my life, and I can't stop thinking about. And then it got to the point where halfway through the gig, I was like, just hold on a second, I'm just going to text. And I just, like, I was on the stage at the O2 and I texted the girl. Everyone was laughing about it.
I bet every mum in the crowd went, yep, let's just check
it. Yeah, they were laughing and, like, loving it. Because, and then she sent me a picture of baby's asleep, of the baby's asleep. I was like, oh. It's got a picture. Right, let's go on. What's the next
song?
But
that's so real. I love it.
It's just funny. It's like, yeah, it was like, I was lucky that I can do that.
Yeah.
And I was lucky that my demographic is, you know, a generation of people that know what that's like and empathise with it, and that will want to buy songs about that.
Yeah.
You know? It's like multi-generational. It's like children, mums and their mums.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like amazing to have that.
Well, so I recently wrote a book called Letters on Motherhood, which is me kind of thinking about a lot of different things. It covers all areas, and it's letters to the boys, letters to Tom, letters to strangers, other mums, letters to different body parts that I feel like I have to accept and send a bit of love to. If you had to write a letter on motherhood, who would it be to, and what would it say? Because I feel like this is what you're doing an album on this right now.
I am, and there's a song on my last album called "The Architect," which is Mother Nature singing to humanity, one of her children. And there's also one called "My Body," which is a love song to my body that I wrote after giving birth because of that. So I am writing those letters, and I actually do write letters to my child quite often. Like every couple of weeks I try and write her a letter that she can open when she's older.
Yeah.
So that she understands what was happening when she was a kid. And actually right now that's a really good thing to do, because this is quite historical. But I'd probably write one to my mother, and I think that I should probably write one to her.
Really?
So I'm a product of an experimental drug for women who had brain tumours in their reproductive gland, the pituitary gland. So I wouldn't exist without medicine either.
Yeah.
I just feel grateful to her because I know now how hard it is. And I think she did a really good job. Like, I feel very equipped. I feel mm-hmm. like she gave me the equipment to be the person that I am, and I attribute a lot of my success to that. I attribute my resilience to it because she can be very harsh.
I've heard you talking about your mum.
And also my grounded nature is the same. But also, yeah, the work ethic, a kind of the empathy, the fact that I can walk into a room and feel what people are feeling. I always know everyone's scared of me because they're like, don't go near her because she'll know. I'm like, we're not feeling good. What's happening? Tell me. yeah, so all of that stuff is, and also I think a sense of worthiness. I think my mum instilled that in me. I think the reason why I've got the confidence to sit and tell you that my body's not what it used to be and that I had a miscarriage and tell you all that stuff without regret or embarrassment is because my mum always made me feel like, warts and all, I was worthy of being here.
That's amazing. Yeah. Because I think there is, I feel like there is a big, not a push for honesty, but I think the more open and honest people are, the more people can forgive themselves, because I don't think everyone is ready to talk. Not everyone feels that they can talk about, you know, whether it's whatever it is.
Totally.
But I think hearing other people vocalise them make other people feel fine. You know, they know yeah. they're not on their own. They've not failed, which so much of parenthood feels like failure, but it's not.
No, and I think as well, when I was growing up, and this is something that I really understand now and I didn't understand then, there was intervals, there were moments in my life where even as a young kid, my mum would say sorry to me. And we might be like walking along, nothing would have happened. And she'd say, I'm sorry, I wasn't always great. Like, I'm sorry when I put you under pressure, when I divorced your dad. And I used to ask you all those questions about what this new woman was wearing. And I was like, oh, don't worry about that. Like, I get it. But she would take the time to say sorry. And I think it's really important when you're growing up, and I tried to do the same with my kid, that by saying sorry, you also acknowledge that we're all fallible. Even like yeah. the best mother in the world is not great on some days. And I say to my child, like, please can you stop waking me up in the middle of the night? And I'll tell you why. Because I get grumpy, then I get grumpy, and then I don't talk to you in the way that I want to talk to you. And sometimes I upset you and I make you cry because I'm snappy. Mm-hmm. That's because I can't cope with the fact you keep waking me up, which is a thing at the moment. But I've got some sort of sticker system going on, which seems to be working. Touch me.
Nice.
So far. but I do think all of that is like, yeah, I think that's why I'm grateful to my mum.
I love that. We end every episode with you finishing three sentences.
Okay.
So the first one is, being a mum means?
There'll be someone to definitely love you until they're at least 16.
After that, forget it.
And after that, they might change their mind.
Since having a child, I
have accepted myself.
And I'm happy when
I go to work.
I love it. That was so nicely rounded from the conversation before. I love it. Paloma, thank you so much for the first remote recording that we've done. So thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to kind of meet you.
Thank you for having me. I'm so honoured to meet you, and I love what you're doing. I think it's so important.
Oh, thank you. I promise to inappropriately hug you when we actually do meet. I'll dive on you for a little bit.
Mask and glove free.
Well, thank you so much.
Bye.